In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose. As long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swarski Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swarski Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swarski Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we've got some Bears talk. We've got mostly, though, baseball season has officially begun. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford Ice Hogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford Ice Hogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You could see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. Season's going on right now, so make sure you head on over to icehogs.com, get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, tickets, and more. Tell them Swarski Sports sent you. Alex, my friend, how are you doing on this wonderful Sunday afternoon?
I am doing well, doing very well. I'm very relieved today because Cubs got a much-needed win after a very frustrating first two games. And, you know, today was really hoping we can pull this one out, and they did. And I feel like the difference between 1-2, 0-3 really shouldn't mean a lot in the grand scheme of things, and it does. But, you know, I've got a lot of thoughts on this series against the Rangers, and I think that you'll kind of share some of the same sentiment that I do with some of these things.
All right. Well, let's get into this. I mean, the biggest noteworthy thing is game one, Justin Steele was looking pretty good. And on a stupid play, he tears his hammy or pulls his hammy, whatever the case is. And it looks like now we won't see him again until May.
Yeah. And the words that were coming out of my mouth when that happened, it was brutal because even before he was on the ground grabbing his hamstring, like you saw how awkward and weird that fall was when he was, you know, shoving that ball over to first base. Like you could just tell like something weird happened, and all it takes is one misstep, one tiny little bad tweak for things to happen. And it sounds like it could have been worse. I mean, kind of based on what Craig Counsell said, it sounds like things could have been even worse than expected, but it almost seems like this is best case scenario in terms of injury. But regardless, you have a buzzsaw of a schedule this month and you don't have the most important pitcher in your organization.
Right. And that's, you know, a little bit scary, I guess, is the right word for that.
Yeah, it is.
And I mean, I'm glad that this was not worse than it was, but like you, when I first saw this, my reaction was Michael Scott when Toby Flenderson comes back to work after Costa Rica.
No!
No, God, no!
When you said Michael Scott, I was going in two different directions. I thought, A, he's going to go in the Toby reaction, or B, he was going to go, it's over. We are screwed.
Yeah, so, I mean, the game one was really frustrating. Is Steele looking real good until that injury? Then you had the blown, the blown bullpen session there, and they dropped the season opener. And you know, first game against a team as good as the Rangers, not that big of a deal, but just the way it happened really was really frustrating.
Yeah, and you know, especially because you got the ultimate gift in the top of the ninth. That was definitely a foul tip by Mastroboni, but it wasn't called and the run was able to score. And then you have scrappy Janikowski, who has like 10 home runs in his entire career, immediately go deep on Adbert Alzolay to blow the save. I mean, that almost kind of felt like baseball karma, but the fact is, in the top of the 10th, Christopher Morel hit a drive that went foul by what, 10, 15 feet?
Yeah.
It had plenty of distance. Like that was the makings of a go-ahead grand slam. He just hooked it foul. And then, Drew Smiley comes in, tough assignment, and he almost gets out of it. Almost. And then just not quite. And it was Josh Heim, I believe, that had the walk-off base hit. And that was really the sourest feelings of that game, was losing Justin Steele. And the fact that the game we watched that opening night felt just like the games we watched last September in Atlanta and in Arizona. It was like the same exact movie. They take the lead, they scratch across a run, they'd give it right back, and then they lose in extras.
Yep. And, at the end of the day, you're like, okay, this stunk. We have a day off. Let's regroup, come back, and tie this series up. And we've got our veteran, Kyle Hendricks, going on the bump. And oof. Oof. That game was brutal.
I did not think that that was a great matchup.
And it wasn't. And is it Hendricks was bad. And I mean, no ifs, ands, or buts about it, but Brown was probably worse.
And he had such a good first inning too. Like, he was looking sharp in the first inning, and then you had some defensive misplays, and then things just kind of unraveled from there. And it's like, on one hand, you're thinking, okay, is Craig Counsell going to let him sit in there and get his ass beat? Or are you going to let him try to see how we can get out of this? And the things just went off the rails there, and just it was ugly.
I mean, and being honest with you is, even though Hendricks didn't have a great outing, is once you pulled him, by the time Brown came in, like it wasn't that far off of a game. Was it like
No,
four
it
to two, five
wasn't.
to two, some 5-2, I think. And they're like, okay, this is not a great place to be, but we're definitely not out of it.
No,
And
you were in it.
then Brown gives up six in the eighth, and then that just hammered home any opportunity or chance for a comeback.
Right. Yeah, and what's unfortunate too is, you look at the situation and you had a series where your starters didn't go deep at all.
No.
And that bullpen really worked hard this weekend. Now, I know we'll get into the third game, obviously, but the fact that Hendricks was only out after a few innings, you're like, we lost Steele yesterday in the mid innings and our bullpen had to work into extras. And then you have this situation where your starter doesn't go deep and you're down. And again, you have to tax your bullpen. And we saw how tired that bullpen got last year at the end.
Yep. And right or wrong, we're already seeing fans upset with Craig Counsell.
I can't be upset with Craig Counsell. I can't. I mean, we can digest every little thing. The one thing that I did question from Craig Counsell is, in game one, remember in extra innings when Garrett Cooper led off the inning? I thought, I'm like, shouldn't Mike Tauchman be in that spot? Because Tauchman can. I mean, Cooper can put the ball in play, but when it comes to like lefty right, I felt like Tauchman, that would have been a better spot for him. But I mean, I get that Cooper can make contact and that it does kind of make sense, but that's kind of the one thing I disagreed with. But I can't point to Craig Counsell those first two losses and say, yeah, you lost this game. I mean, frankly, I think Craig Counsell was very self-aware of the team he was facing, because do you remember an extra, like in the late innings, extra innings, you had guys on base and you're like, okay, here's this Wyatt Langford kid. He's seeing everything. It's like, no, we're not pitching to that. I mean, that to me is self-awareness. And I also like the fact that he's put Morel fourth because we've seen him capitalize in big spots so far, with the bat in that spot. But I really can't point to Counsell and say you lost these first two games. I mean, Kyle Hendricks, he just went out there and got his ass kicked. He got
Yeah,
his 89 mile an hour fastball ass kicked.
and to be fair, is the defense behind him didn't help at all.
God, no. And that's where we get to today's game. I mean, you had two errors in innings that equated to five runs. It was the second inning, I believe, with the Morel missed throw, and then Wicks walked two guys, which did not help things either. And then Dansby Swanson had the error on the double play ball that opened the door for the Rangers. So, yeah, I mean, and then you remember in game one, even, I'll be a little more fair to Madrigal at third in this one, because remember when he couldn't make the play on that smash to him? I mean, do you want him to pick that? Yes. Does Nolan Arenado pick that? Probably. The one thing I will say is, holy crud. I mean, that ball was stung. Like, that was hit insanely hard. But, still, you want those plays to be made, and they weren't.
Yeah, I Morel at third is not off to a hot start.
No.
His bat, yes. His glove, no.
Exactly. It's a little worrisome, and if you're gonna make it work, he needs time to play, but you can't have big errors costing you games. And here's another point too. Did you notice what Craig Counsell did in today's game with Morel?
I only watched bits and pieces of it today. So
He
did he pull him for?
put Madrigal in as a defensive replacement late.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna guess. I had
And
to
if it's a
guess.
close game and that bat's not in there, well, that's not ideal, but can I blame Craig Counsell for taking out the shaky defense? I really can't. Luckily, it
No.
all worked out, but
Yeah, I mean the bullpen was pitched really well today.
they were really sharp. Mark Leiter Jr. was sharp. Hector Neris was sharp. Julian Merriweather, two sparkling innings. I mean, that was well done as a whole by that entire bullpen. And then Abert Alzolay redeemed the Thursday night and was able to get a 1-2-3. It wasn't a save, but a 1-2-3 ninth inning, drama free. So big props to them because that's not an easy assignment.
No, not at all. Wicks didn't have a great game, but it was good enough, especially when that offense came alive.
And
Happer and
the
Saya
errors
looking
did
good.
not help him.
The errors did not help. It's another game where a starting pitcher gives up five runs, but only two earned.
Yeah, exactly. And that second inning, the pitch count was really, really high.
Yeah. Is the 1-2 start ideal? No. Is it the end of the world? No. Especially considering you were on the road against a team that's really good. You feel like, okay, we've got a lot of the I don't know what to call it, the bad juju out of the way. Maybe we can settle in and, we're going to be without Steele for a while. Tyone's out for another, what, 2 or 3 weeks. It's let's maintain and, try to shore this up.
People will laugh at me when I say it, but I think you have to look at that game today. And you don't really ever say that game three of a 162 season is a must win, but that was as close to a must win for the Cubs in a game three of a 162 game season. I felt like you needed to come home with some positive juju on your side, kind of like what you just said. I mean, coming home after getting swept And losing your ace would not be a good feeling. I felt like for morale purposes, from the human aspect, it was really important to get a win today. And they did a great job in the ninth inning, not only rallying to take the lead, but breaking it open. How many times late in games have we seen the Cubs have like a golden opportunity to really score some runs and they either don't score any or they just like squeak across one on like a slow grounder when you could have done a lot more damage? Today, they got the go-ahead run in and they got in three more insurance runs. That's the kind of breaking open late that you like to see.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was a big problem last year, as you did not see them break games open. And those, when you break it open, even if your bullpen's pitching, it's they're not pitching with the sense of urgency or with the level of stress. It's a lot easier of an inning that they go in, or two innings that they go in. And so when you're taxing the bullpen by innings, at least give them the cushion of not having the added level, the stress level, or the pressure on them as well. So being able to break these kind of innings open is going to be important on this season. And I think they have the bats to do it.
Yeah. I mean, because today they drew what, 9 walks today? Like that was already more than any other game last year. So if you have that approach, you can do that kind of stuff. And the key at bat was Ian Happ taking the go-ahead walk. Like that's a great at bat right there. That was huge.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Happ had a great game. Saya had a good game, and it was nice for Saya to get that final out in the field.
Yep. Yep.
So, you know, not an ideal start to the season, but I don't, other than, you know, the steel injury, this was probably my expectation is coming back 1-2.
Yeah, I mean, it's not unrealistic to think against the, you know, defending champs. It's just what's frustrating for me is you see the weaknesses in the spots where you really could have bulletproofed this team.
Yeah, I think right off the bat, we're looking at why couldn't you have added one of the big starters, especially on the Snell or Montgomery deals that they got? Why couldn't you have added one? That would have made the steel hamstring injury, while still not ideal, hurt less, be less impactful.
Well, and keep this in mind too, that at this point in his career, and it's not to shit on him because I love him, but the fact that Kyle Hendricks is your number two right now, we were supposed to be kind of past that. We were supposed to look at Kyle Hendricks as, okay, you're the guy down in the rotation. We know you can still give us good starts, but relying on him to be number two, not ideal.
Is he really the number two, or did they not want Imanaga's first start to be against a team with that kind of bat on the road?
Well, I think that's valid. I really do. I think that they didn't want to throw him to the fire right away, but either way, the scenario is you put him at number two. If you had a deeper rotation, you still could have had Imanaga start at Wrigley Field at home instead of in Texas, while also not relying on Kyle Hendricks being the two. And, you know, I get it that, you know, it's kind of your only option right now, but that's kind of my whole point. I mean, because if you could have had one more starter, then you wouldn't have the same kind of pressure there.
Yeah, because you're already in a hole with Tyone's, I don't know if you call it injury, but the back issue, that puts you in a hole because, you know, he's not available. I think they're saying possibly like the 17th or 18th of April. So like 3 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, you're gonna have to rely facing teams like the Astros and the Dodgers coming up and the Diamondbacks. You're gonna be throwing out Javier Assad, and you're gonna be throwing out, you know, current form Kyle Hendricks. Shota Imanaga, he's yet to pitch in the majors. Hopefully his first start goes well. And then if you go to Ben Brown, an inexperienced guy. So the timing of this just sucks because the schedule is so brutal.
Yeah. I mean, the only hope is you can stay afloat and then Tyone and Steele come back and look good and really, you can really rattle off a few victories in a row.
Yeah, and I know I sound annoying and paranoid, and just let me be a meatball for a sec. It was very annoying seeing both the Brewers and the Pirates sweep their respective series, because it's like, really, we're in this hole already. We're like, they're off to this great start, but it is only one series, so it's still kind of annoying.
I mean, the Astros are 0-4.
That's true.
That's how I put it all into perspective. The Astros are 0-4.
They are. Yeah. Hey, so, Yankees team is looking pretty good. That Juan Soto is looking pretty good over there.
Yeah. But it will be nice, hopefully, to come back to Chicago and play against the Rockies.
If they even play.
Yeah, we'll see what the
weather. That weather is not looking good at all this week.
Yeah, I was looking at it. It looks like rain tonight, tomorrow, and Tuesday, and snow on Wednesday.
Yeah.
And that's what it was as of this morning.
Yeah.
We've got any change here.
It's still looking pretty grim, I think.
Rain today, rain Monday, rain Tuesday, snow Wednesday. Yep. And cold. 32 on Wednesday. 35 on Tuesday, 40 on Monday.
Yeesh.
Yeah, so who knows? Who knows how this goes, but baseball scheduler should work to start the seasons for the first several weeks in the South, in the West Coast, and in domes.
I know. I was just saying that. I mean, hell. Look at Milwaukee, man. They got that dome. Like, you don't have that at Wrigley Field or Guaranteed Rate Field or Pittsburgh or Cincinnati. But, hey, you got plenty of teams in the South. We were just in Texas. That is not only a warm climate, but a dome. So, I agree. You should probably do more to schedule more games there because you have a lot of snow rainouts early in the season.
Yeah. I mean, you've got several teams in California. You've got team in Arizona. You got a few teams in Florida. You've got a couple teams in Texas. You got a few teams that play in domes. Like, work those through. Work. I mean, that's. I don't. And then, like, at least with the Bears, I'm 100% pro dome. I'm 0% for a dome for the Cubs, but. The fact is you shouldn't have games until after tax day in Wrigley Field.
Yeah, or at least keep them to kind of a minimum.
Yeah, like make them, I don't know. It's tough. It's tough because the weather is so unpredictable.
It is.
Other side of town. It's been a tough start for the White Sox.
You haven't won a game, and yet you were competitive in all of them.
I'm going to say Garrett Crochet looked really darn good.
He exceeded my expectations, that for sure. I mean, I didn't think he wasn't going to pitch well because he's got great stuff. I just didn't think he was going to go that deep. I was thinking, okay, he'll go four innings, and, if he goes four innings, one run, that's a big win, but six innings, one run. It's pretty damn good.
Yeah, he looked real good. I watched I either listened to or watched almost that entire game. And man, he was looking fantastic and no walks.
Yeah.
Eight strikeouts. That was to get the loss going six innings with one earned run, eight strikeouts and no walks. That's brutal.
That's a tough loss.
Yeah, the offense did him no favors, and Skubal pitched pretty well, but even when they got to the bullpen, it was
They bowled over him.
the White Sox did not look good. You had multiple strikeout games from Benintendi, Luis Robert, Vaughn, DeYoung. All of those guys had multiple strikeout games. You just couldn't give them anything. That was tough. And not only that is this the Detroit Tigers did not give up a single walk in that game. White
No,
Sox.
didn't they only have like three base runners?
Let's see. I believe so. Robert, Jimenez, and Vaughn all got hits. So you were just never really in contention in that one. Even though it was a one-run game, it just felt like it was done. Like
Yeah.
just the way that they were getting mowed down. I was like, okay, when the starting pitcher went out, you're like, okay, let's see what happens. And they're just nada. And by the time that Chafin came in, I'm like, no, this is a donezo game. And that's exactly what happened. So not a great way to start. It was n nice to see Crochet look good, but the White Sox bats just fell asleep.
Yeah, no, they didn't do much because they were all singles, right? All three hits.
I believe so, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, because I thought I read somewhere they didn't get a runner past second base.
Yeah, so it was just a really tough game for the White Sox. And then you had game two, and you felt good about that one. You were up like what's like 6-3 at one point. You're like, okay, I'm feeling good. The bats are starting to look good. And
Luis Robert went off two home runs.
yeah, Luis Robert with two home runs. And went 3-for-4. You had Moncada who had a triple. You're like, okay. And then the bullpen, didn't hold up. And Soroka didn't have a great game. It wasn't a god awful game. But it wasn't a very good game. I mean, didn't strike out a single guy in five innings. But you figured with the bats that was good enough to bring it home. And nope, goes into 10 and you lose 7-6.
Yeah.
And then game three, you're like, all right, can we bring this home? And nope. 3-2 loss. So you're 0-3 on the season with 3 1-run losses.
And what happened again?
The offense just really stunk.
And
Louis.
else, what else ha happened?
Oh, what? I didn't watch the game today.
It happened. Let me just give you a hint. It's as sure as the sun coming up with a certain player.
Oh, Eloy
Eloy
got
got
injured.
hurt. Yep.
Oh man, I didn't see that. Oof.
Yep.
Oh, but Luis Robert had three strikeouts. Moncada had two strikeouts. DeYoung had another two strikeouts. It's
We see homered.
true, true.
I'll give him that.
But Javi Baez already starting the season not so hot.
Oh yeah, he had the one hit on opening day, to the shower of booze, and what was it? The new broadcaster Schriffen was like, "Why are they booing him?" And it's like, "Well, you really don't know, do you?"
Maybe learn the history of rivalries.
Yeah, but.
And it's not a it's gonna be a tough start because then the White Sox play Atlanta next. And that's gonna be a tough draw.
Oh yeah, I mean, Atlanta's like what the Cubs saw with the Rangers. I mean, that lineup just hits everything. Now, remind, are the Sox going to Atlanta? Or is Atlanta coming here?
Let me see. I just know they're playing in Atlanta, but I didn't see where it was. Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun, dun. It is in Chicago, if it
Right.
happens.
Yeah, because I think my one buddy Tommy, shout out to Tommy Irby, we do the Through the Garden podcast together now. He was thinking about doing the red line, the or whatever you call it, where you go to the Cubs game during the day and you go to the White Sox game
Oh,
at
not
night.
tomorrow. No, they're White Sox are 110 tomorrow.
I think he was going Wednesday.
Wednesday. Yeah, that's Wednesday is the White Sox are at 110, the Cubs are at 640.
Okay, so it's flip-flopped.
Yeah. And then both are at 640 on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Some weird times, man.
Yeah. So it was Wednesday that he was gonna do. And he's like, eh, it's supposed to snow, so I'm not really sure I'm gonna be doing that.
Like that would be fun in June.
Oh
Not
yeah.
like April 3rd with snow.
Because you could be at the Sox game. And maybe it's good enough to play, and then you're on your way to the Cubs game. Oh, no, it's been canceled. You never know.
Do you think how do you think Jason Benetti's feeling after that series?
Okay, I gotta tell you, out of curiosity, I went on Twitter to look at a lot of the Detroit Tigers highlight clips that have Jason Benetti. He sounded like more pumped up than usual when the Tigers did something.
I mean, wouldn't you be? Like leaving the White Sox was not something that he wanted to do, I don't think.
No, God, that was his childhood dream, was to
Yeah.
do play-by-play for the Sox.
And I don't know if we'll ever find out exactly what transpired, but when you have a dream gig in your hometown and then they don't want you anymore. Or cast you aside, or whatever the case may be. Like, of course,
Disrespect you.
yeah, of course you're gonna get pumped up when your new team goes and plays them, especially when they win.
Of course. I mean, I could hear on that highlight, like he was like even like the last out of the sweep, like Benetti was pumped up. And there was even a clip showing him. Did you hear about that new thing they have at Guaranteed Rate Field, that campfire milkshake that they have?
Oh my God, that thing looks like diabetes.
It does look like diabetes, but they had on the Tigers broadcast, Jason was having one of those shakes.
I saw the picture.
You saw the picture. And do you remember what Jason Benetti said publicly about like how he was criticized by someone in the Sox organization, possibly Jerry, that they didn't like him eating on the broadcast? Do you remember that?
Vaguely. If that's the reason that you get rid of Jason Benetti, that's so stupid. And I'm not here to shit on Shriffins. Like, he was fine. Like, very technically sound, I guess. Like,
Yes.
no gaffes, no, like, nothing embarrassing. It's just, it, there was no. I don't want
You're still settling in. It's not the same.
to. The It's like whenever you have a national broadcast and they get excited, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just you don't have that passion for the team. And that's what that you don't feel that from him. And why would you at this point? But it's lacking. Like the part of the hometown broadcast is you get that homerism.
Right.
As much as I didn't like Hawk, like you knew right from the jump that if you cut him open, he's bleeding White Sox.
Right.
That's what you want. Even somebody like Harry Carey, where there's that Cubs weren't always his team. Like he broadcast for the Cardinals and the White Sox, but like when he was with the Cubs, he bled Cubby blue. And you want that. That's what you want. NFL is much more polished, and you're going to get the national broadcast, and it's going to be very, neutral. There'll be exciting plays, but it's very neutral team oriented. But baseball is not like that, and that's part of the allure of it. And I think Schriffins would have been wise to take part of the off season and just really dive into the psyche of being a White Sox fan and what that history is, and try to blend that in, because there's nothing wrong with what he did. It was just very national broadcasty.
Right.
And I'll be honest, I had my haterade already in a glass, ready to go, ready to blast him. And I was like, okay. I mean, he didn't do anything wrong. Just that we just felt a little off.
Right.
So, I feel like it wasn't a bad hire. He's going to settle in. He'll get the hang of it. He's got Stoney there. But I just, you really did lose somebody in Jason Benetti.
You lost somebody big time in Jason Benetti. And I mean, it's not only the fact that he left, but he left for one of your biggest rivals in Detroit. And he's in your division. And you're going to be reminded every time you play the Tigers, who's in that broadcast booth. And one of my good buddies, shout out to Chris, is a big Tigers fan. And he's texting me in my group chat. He's like, man, I am loving Jason Benetti. And I'm like, yeah, you should be. He's great.
Yeah, he's really good, and he's young, so he's going to be there for a long time.
Yeah. I mean,
So
could you imagine if we're like 10 years from now and you're thinking like if Benetti's still there over like a decade plus, that would mean he'd be broadcasting longer for the Tigers than his hometown team. Like, wouldn't that just feel crazy?
I mean, it's probably going to happen. Like, how old is he at this point?
Not that old.
Yeah, he's not that old. Jason Benetti, he's 40.
Yeah.
So, there it's very likely that he's got, in his broadcast career, bare minimum 20 years.
Sure.
So I mean, this very well he could just smash the amount of time he was with the White Sox in Detroit.
I remember, even as a Cubs fan, I remember that day, how shocking that was. Because I didn't expect it. You didn't expect it. Nobody
No,
expected it.
not at all. Not at all. So it was I don't understand. It's something that I don't understand, and I think the White Sox did a huge disservice to their fans not having any sort of explanation. And I guess you can't really dig deep into things because that can be petty, but the at least give something to fans of why a guy that they liked that had been there for what, 7 seasons? That's a long time. And the fans liked him. He was very much liked.
Oh yeah, he was very popular, and I remember many Sox fans telling me he's like, listen, this Sox team is bad, last year, but I still watch the games so I could listen to him. Like he was a reason to tune in.
And, could he be critical of the White Sox? Yeah. But nothing that was, I would say over the top or, taking away from your employer, but, being realistic. And he went through some tough seasons as a as an announcer, and John Triffins is going to have to figure that out, because at some point this White Sox team is going to lose a whole lot of games, and it's going to be curious to see that enthusiasm that he carries in his the way he broadcasts, how that's going to sound when, you know, you're 15 games out and on pace to lose 97, 98 games. Can you keep that up?
I mean,
You know.
because Benetti really mastered entertaining the masses if the Sox were up 10 to nothing or down 10 to nothing. Like, you know, he never really missed a beat on the broadcast. And that is so much harder to do than it seems. And I always felt like Len Casper did a good job of that, too.
Agreed. Agreed.
And that takes real, real skill. And he was a master at it. So, you know, John Triffitt, he's got a tough assignment. Not saying he can't do it. It's just saying it is a tough assignment going forward for him.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to sound blasphemous, and I don't mean it to be.
Uh-oh.
I loved Ron and I loved Harry as announcers. But part of what they brought was they were just big meatball fans in there.
Yes.
And they could not bring some of the like Benetti on some levels was much superior to them as an announcer because of you know his of like the you know the baseball nerd that he could bring to it. You know, did he capture all of their you know the essence that they had? No, but he was still good. So there was just you know he brought a lot to you know if you would have kept him around, he could have been one of those all-time great announcers that you know flagship teams have in their history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Cubs have had multiple, and you know I don't know. That's it. Just is what it is, and it's Jerry baseball.
Mm-hmm. Shame.
Anything else you want to say about baseball?
Well,
oh, there's one thing I want to say, but I'll let you go first.
All I was going to say is let's just buckle down and hope this stretch isn't too awful for the Cubs.
What I want to say is, did you happen to see who the veteran was that the Mets honored for their game the other day?
No, who?
So, you know how, like, a lot of teams, they'll honor a veteran and show them on the big screen.
Yeah.
So the Mets go out and announce Army or military veteran Seymour Wieners.
At first, I thought that was, like, somebody photoshopped that. It's like, no.
That's his name. Nobody was like, Mabe, who's our second choice?
I almost felt like they did that on purpose. Like, hey, look at this guy's name. Let's bring him out.
His name is Seymour Wieners. That's such a Simpsons like joke. I was like, when I saw that, I was like, no.
Can someone check the bathroom for a huge ass? Oh, I'm huge ass.
Man. Oh, go Mets. They should have done that on Bobby Bonilla Day.
Oh man, that would have been funny.
Just take the heat off. If I was the Mets, man, every Bobby Bonilla Day, I would do something absolutely wild to just take away the stigma and the humor of Bobby Bonilla Day.
Yeah, right.
But I want to move to the Bears a little bit. You know, there's not a ton going on, but you know, we've heard from, you know, a lot more from Kevin Warren, Ryan Poles, and Matt Eberflus this week than we have probably in a while. They've been making the rounds, doing interviews, and I like some of the things that they've said, and I'm trying to temper expectations, and but I feel like they all three of them realize that they're at like the precipice of a change in this organization, and it's up to them which way this goes. Does this do they make it to the pinnacle of this change and fall back down to where they've been and the cycle that they've been going through, or can they make it over and really change the way that everybody views the Chicago Bears as an organization? And I think they all recognize the gravity of where they are in this process.
Yeah, and I feel like whether or not they're successful carrying out this plan, whether or not I think they've pulled all the right stops, the one thing I can say is they seem to at least have a clear-cut vision. Like they know what they want, and that includes the quarterback. They wanted their quarterback to have certain traits, and they tried to make Justin Fields into one of those quarterbacks that they wanted. We saw him with the pocket passing and all that stuff, and they're like, I think that they gave him a fair shot to be their guy. But I think you can almost say it's fair that Ryan Poles, he knew what he wanted all along. And again, I don't know if this is gonna work or not. The past always tells me don't have faith in the Bears because they're the Bears, but I do see a clear-cut vision, a vision that I didn't always see in the last era, whether it was good or bad. I mean, you kind of saw some of it, but I mean, like, I know what they're trying to become. I know what they want to see in their quarterback. I know what they want to see on defense. It's pretty clear-cut. Can they become that? We'll see. I just hope it all works out, but they clearly have a plan here, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I think they have a plan, and I feel like they. You've seen the Matrix movies, right?
Yes.
So by the third movie, Neo, he's in the zone, and he's anticipating things. Everything is slowed down. I feel that's how Ryan Poles is viewing this offseason. Whether it works out or not, I don't know, but I feel like he has, I agree with you, this vision. He's working towards it, and things are playing out in his favor for what he wants to do. And again, I don't know how this will work out, but he wanted a certain quarterback. That quarterback seems to be there. He's been able to pick up some sensible free agents. He has seemingly bolstered some of the positions of need, or most of the positions of need. He's built this defense that, honestly, I think they could be one player away from being a really, really dominant defense. And the offense is he has put some pretty nice weapons around a rookie quarterback, in the running back, the two tight ends, and two absolute stud wide receivers. Like this, I can't think of a number one overall pick quarterback that's going to be handed a situation like this. A top defense with, if healthy, probably an above average offensive line and pretty solid weapons around him. So
Right.
it just seems like it's coming together for Ryan Poles, and I feel like you listen to him talk and it seems like he knows something. And honestly, I'm sure his team and his staff have sat down and kind of played out how this draft is going to work out. And the way they talk about it, they seem really confident in getting a dude at the number 9 pick. I know a lot of the fans are like, well, one of the wide receivers is not going to be there at nine. And what are we going to do? We have to trade back and try. I don't, based on what I'm hearing from them, I don't think they're going to trade back. I think they're picking at number nine.
I would not be surprised if they did, based on what we've heard.
Yeah, I mean, they are talking about like their blue players or their blue chip players. And I'm going through, and honestly, for the Bears, we've heard, I can't remember if it was Poles or Kevin Warren mentioned that with their first round picks, they want with that number nine pick, they want somebody that can help the quarterback or get to the quarterback. So, honestly, that narrows that down quite a bit. I mean, it's telling you they're not going after defensive backs or linebackers in that first round. So you start looking at, who obviously Caleb Williams is going to be their number one pick. So then it starts looking, all right, who could fit that parameters and fit what the Bears need. And I came up with a list of guys that are blue chip type players that could help this team be impactful at number nine.
Mm-hmm.
And Alt at left tackle, not my biggest want list. Like I said last week, I just feel that you don't get as much bang for your buck there, even though he's really good. Marvin Harrison Jr., I don't think he's going to be there.
I don't think so either.
He's on your list. Malik Nabers, again, I don't think he's going to be there, but when you're picking it out, you're like, okay, we're drafting at nine. You'd better have nine players that you feel confident with, or you're going to have to move up. So, I made this list of guys I was comfortable with and made sure that there was nine, and it didn't only have to be eight because you got your guy at one. But so Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze, Dallas Turner, Jared Verse, Leatu Latu, Byron Murphy, and Johnny Newton from Illinois. And I know everybody's just mocked edge rusher and wide receiver to the Bears. But man, don't be shocked if they don't pull in an absolute stud defensive tackle to put in the middle and just rotate in with Dexter, Billings, and whoever they would draft.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be shocked, frankly.
Yeah, so those are the guys. And I think, if we could get four quarterbacks drafted in the top eight picks, man, that really opens things up for the Bears.
The one thing that I think I could say with pretty much full confidence is, regardless if they trade back or not, it's not going to happen until the pick is on the clock, because they need to evaluate what's on the board first. Because there could be that scenario, I think, where they get to number nine and the guys that they wanted are gone. And, you mentioned a number of guys, so their guys on that big whiteboard could be fairly extensive, but, I certainly wouldn't jump the shark on trading that pick if there was a possibility. I definitely don't think it's going to happen until that they actually get that pick.
Oh, absolutely. But I feel like they're going to work through so many scenarios. And that's part of being in the draft is, people are like, oh, draft this guy. Is when you're in the draft, it's, that famous Mike Tyson quote, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth.
Uh-huh.
Not quite, nobody's punching anybody in the mouth in the draft. But if you go into the draft and you're fully expecting to pick a guy at the spot, and you're like, I know this guy's going to be there, or I'm prepping for this guy, and you're like, I think a lot of teams have like a later grade on him, and I think I love him. I'm going to pick this guy at whatever pick. and if somebody jumps ahead of you and picks him, or somebody in front of you picks him, if you're not prepared, the whole draft falls apart. I mean, this is a microcosm, but I've done a lot of mock drafts, and some like with groups of people, and you start going through your picks, and if the board doesn't start breaking like you want it to break, or you're expecting it to break, and the groups of players that are in your, around your pick, you're like, man, I have all the best players available are, positions I don't really need anybody. So now I've got to, do I draft the best player in a position I don't really need, or do I reach for a guy that is it a position I need? And it quickly goes off the rails, and the draft, can really easily go off the rails if that happens, if you're not prepared. And I feel like Ryan Poles and his team are going to be really prepared with every scenario that they could think of and work through, which teams are likely to trade up, what would be, what if, how is this going to play out if Washington does something crazy, like at number two, draft JJ McCarthy? How is that going to change the scenario? And
If things happen in the drafts, man. We see it every year.
yeah, it just takes one team to do something wild, and
Everything changes.
everything changes, and everybody starts to react to it. And I think Washington could really just number two change things up. I mean, if this plays out, Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, okay, that's nothing crazy there. But like I said, if right off the bat the Commanders choose somebody like JJ McCarthy, you're going to see a whole bunch of teams trying to trade up with Arizona, with New England, with the Chargers, with the Giants, trying to get, oh man, Drake May fell. How low will he fall? Jaden Daniels fell. Okay, where are we going from here? If you could get four quarterbacks in the first eight picks, that really does open up a whole lot for the Chicago Bears.
It does.
And also the way the Chargers go about this draft could just really change things. What if somebody takes the first defensive player off the board before the Bears go on the clock? That's huge. I've seen a lot of people take one of the cornerbacks or Dallas Turner ahead of the Bears. I still think all three wide receivers come off the board by the time the Bears pick, but there's a whole lot of scenarios where one of those guys is available.
Sure.
And I think if Malik Nabers, Marvin Harrison Jr., Roma Dunze is available at nine, that they're sprinting to the podium to make that announcement.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt.
But yeah, the last thing I had here is I kind of looked at who's still available in the draft, or I mean in free agency at edge and wide receiver, which I think are, after they fill their quarterback hole at number one, are their two biggest needs. And edge is pretty tapped. You've got
I was going to say.
Carl Lawson, Yannick Ngakoue, Shaq Lawson, Justin Houston. It's a bunch of nobodies and a bunch of old dudes.
Yeah.
So that's tough. Wide receiver, Byron Pringle, Hunter Renfrow, Allen Robinson, Odell Beckham Jr., Tyler Boyd, MVS, and Equanimeous St. Brown, kind of the bigger names. A little bit better than the other list, but like I think you could add one of those guys. and make your number three spot a lot better. Like, I think a Hunter Renfrow would be a fantastic pickup for a rookie quarterback as a safety valve. But yeah. But the last thing I want to talk about the Bears is we've seen the public really go after Caleb Williams for his phone case and lip gloss and nail polish. And I've heard the term LGBTQB1. And I love the fact that he doesn't give a shit.
I know, isn't it great?
He does not care. And I've seen him take some funny swipes at like people on Twitter and just totally roast them. And you're like, man, you're like, this guy's witty and he lets that stuff roll off his back. That's a good sign.
I'll tell you what, there's one thing that I don't think he lacks at all, and that's confidence.
No, none. He does not at all lack confidence. And, I'm going to say is we've had a lot of quarterbacks in this building over the years that try to turn that, like, turn down the outside noise. Don't turn on the TVs in the locker room. I deleted my social media, et cetera, et cetera. And I can't blame them because that's probably what I would do too.
Sure, me too.
I don't want to hear the criticism. I don't want to get beat up when I can't defend myself. But this feels different. Like, this dude's like, I'm not going to use the term villain, but I feel like he's got a little bit of that in him where he's just like, I don't think you call Mahomes a villain, but he's not afraid to dive into that pool if he needs to and get, and just be the dude that just, I don't give a fuck. I'm gonna go out there and whip you, and nothing you can say about it that's gonna hurt my feelings.
Yeah, and I really like that. I really, really do.
Yeah, we've, Jay Cutler had a little bit of that, but like not in the same way.
No, it not in the same way at all.
Like the way Caleb has it is very Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Pat Mahomes kind of way.
It's
And
something we haven't seen with the past few quarterbacks. I mean, you made the reference to turning off the TVs. That was Mitch Trubisky at Hallis Hall.
I don't blame him. I would have too. It's tough when you feel like everybody's out to get you. Same thing with Justin Fields. I don't blame him. I would be the same way. Caleb just, he's out there like, here's my phone case. You don't like my phone case? Here's my phone case. It's pink. Here's my nails. Look at them. They're beautiful. Like, no cares. And he's gonna go out
None.
there and he's gonna go out there on Sundays and just put a dagger in you.
That's what I want to see. That's all I've wanted to see. Please be good, Caleb Williams.
I'm not buying a Caleb Williams jersey. I'm not
Don't.
buying a Caleb Williams jersey. I'm not doing it.
Don't.
Not gonna happen. So as we're recording this, we're less than 25 days away from the draft. And it's a lot more fun at this point than it was a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like a lot of the Justin Fields stuff has really died down.
Yeah, I mean, I still people take swipes at him for no reason. It's a beating a dead horse. It's one thing if he was a turd and you didn't like him as a person. Like, people keep beating up Aaron Rodgers. All right, fair game. He's a turd. But Justin Fields, like, you could say, you can have whatever take you want on the field, but off the field, Dude was a good dude.
Right.
He was great with fans. He was especially with kids. He was a stand-up dude. And at some point you just gotta lay off. He's not the Bears anymore. Is wish him well and move
Move
on.
forward. Yep.
But it's that Carolina trade. If Caleb Williams ends up being a dude, like, or the dude, the Caleb Williams to DJ Moore connection is just going to sting Carolina fans forever.
Yeah. Especially if Bryce Young doesn't take another step forward.
I don't think he's going to be as bad as he was last year when you build around him.
I agree.
I just think he's limited.
I agree. I think
And
he will improve. I just don't see him being a superstar.
yeah, I could he be serviceable? Yeah. But I just don't think he's going to be that guy. That team gave up a lot to go get him. And the Bears capitalized.
And that was a team CEO and owner hijacking the process
Yep.
completely.
Yep. Do you want to talk Blackhawks and Bulls, or do we wrap this up today?
I don't have much to say about either. The Blackhawks overall have been playing some fairly entertaining hockey recently. Nick Foligno is playing well. Jason Dickinson continues to play well. Obviously, Connor Bedard is in there. You're seeing Kevin Korchinski grow a little bit. Boy, I'll tell you, they had a really nice game in Philadelphia last night. That's usually a place of horrors for the Blackhawks, but they had a great game last night when they beat the Flyers. And it's been a bit more pleasurable to watch the Blackhawks, even though they were eliminated from the playoffs prior to St. Patrick's Day. I'm going to one more game next week, so hopefully they'll continue that. But we're at the point right now where we're just kind of, it's like, all right, there's X number of games left, and then it is what it is. And I think when it comes to the Bulls, you're just counting down to the play-in tournament because I think that's where we're destined to be.
It's funny to look how bad the Blackhawks season has been, and you're like, and it's been bad. But if you look, they are so much better in the record wise than San Jose.
San Jose is brutal.
San Jose is bad. And so let's see, what do the Blackhawks have? They have 8 games left. And how many does
Remember, San Jose was the team we came back from. We were down 4-0 and beat them.
Yeah, San Jose has 9 games left. So, and the Blackhawks are 7 points in front of them.
Yeah, that's
That
oof.
they're not catching up. So, does that mean San Jose is going to get the number one pick? No, but boy, it gives them some good odds.
It does. Could you imagine if San Jose ended up with like the fourth pick?
I think they can only drop 2 spots.
Okay, so it would
So
be like the third pick at
the
worst.
third pick.
But still.
Yeah, that would be brutal. 'Cause this is This tr so last year you had a couple of guys that went straight from the draft into the NHL.
You had
That's
Bedard, you had what was the guy that drafted by Columbus?
the guy from Michigan.
Yeah.
But I think there was three. I think three
Yes.
guys. And this year it's only going to be one dude. It's going to be Celebrini.
Celebrini's, yeah, he's the main guy.
And after that, I don't think anybody else is going to make that jump right away. So,
Right, you
like
don't
that.
have the Adam Fantilli is who I was thinking of. You don't have the Adam Fantilli next to the n next to Celebrini per se.
Yeah, like the Like Fantilli was a pretty nice consolation prize to not winning Bedard.
If Bedard wasn't in that draft, Fantilli would have gone first.
Yeah. And I mean, and he's a nice player. He's playing well. And but Bedard is like a generational dude, like a legit generational dude. And like Celebrini is really good and he's gonna step right in next season. So that's nice for a team to just, be able to plug that guy right in and see the fruit of your tough season. And I would love to see him in the Blackhawks uniform.
Yeah, that would be cool.
And as far as the Bulls, they're
they are
there.
what they are.
We talked a lot about them last week with Fred, but there's not very many games left. Let's see, the Bulls have 74 games, so they have 8 games left as well, and they're kind of wedged in there. They're not going to catch up. They're not going to get to 8. They're too far behind the 76ers. So they're like 4.5 games behind the Sixers. That's too much to catch up in 8 games. And they're one game above the Hawks. So they're going to be 9 or 10. So they'll be in that play-in tournament.
Yeah, that's where we're destined to be, just like last year.
Yeah, because the Nets are just there. Yeah, so they're 9 or 10. That's so yeah, I mean,
and they're win loss. They have a nice win, then an awful loss. You lose to the Wizards and Detroit and Brooklyn, and then you have some nice games against more notable teams. It's just a never ending cycle of the same stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's they're about to win tonight against the Timberwolves.
Who are very good.
Yeah. And then, you get mud stomped on Friday against the Nets.
Yeah. Just, it's remarkable. It truly is.
And then you blow out the Pacers.
Yeah.
It's just, it doesn't, like, there's no consistency in this at all.
No.
You lose a tough one to the Wizards. There's no consistency there, and that's why, will they make the play-in tournament? Yeah, I think it would be wild.
It'd be hard
if they
not
did.
To make the play-in tournament.
They would have to just have an epic meltdown. But what's the upshot of that? I mean, you've got to really go on a run to be able to even make it into the actual playoffs.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
Let's see what the current let's see plan. Looking for the playoff. NBA playoff picture. Does it have the play-in tournament? Let's see. East. So the Bulls would be playing the Hawks. And
it's winnable.
That's winnable. And then probably the Heat or the Sixers after that.
Probably not going to win that.
Probably not going to win that. So, yeah.
Just like last year.
Yeah, so, cool. You're really cemented in that. I like I said, you're not catching up to the 76ers. And Brooklyn Brooklyn is too far behind you to catch up, I think. But we shall see. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about?
Nope. I think I said my piece.
I think that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Share this podcast with your friends, help grow the show. Follow us on social media at Swirsky Sports, Facebook.com/Swirsky Sports, SwirskySports.com, or ShyFanPat2 for Alex on Twitter, or AlexanderJPatCreative.com for all the cool stuff that Alex does. And again, thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van.
And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on the plains.
Bears 31 to -7.
The Bears!
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down, I wanna...